As Fabio Alexandria of GB Berlotto explains in the interview you're about to hear, Frasia is a genetic parent of Nebbiolo and shares with Nebbiolo a firm character with substantial tannins. Because Frasia is both harder to grow than Nebbiolo and also sells for less money, fewer and fewer growers are still producing Frasia wines. But GB Berlotto is one of the exceptions, and their Frasia is one of the best out there. If you would like to try it for yourself, there's a great deal available to you now as a listener of the podcast from the excellent team at Crush Wine and Spirits. They are offering a discount on the GB Berlotto 2013 Frasia so that the pricing comes down to $18.95 a bottle if you call them at 212-980-9463 and use the offer code IDTT for me, or if you use that same promo code online at crushwineco.com. You'll be able to pick up the 2013 GB Berlotto Frasia for a sizable discount off the normal price. Just remember to give Crush the offer code IDTT for me, IDTTFORME, when it comes time to place your order. As Barolo prices climb higher and higher, it is easy to appreciate the strong value that Frasia represents to wine drinkers. Frasia is a grape variety that is very much linked to the history of the Piemonte, and so is the GB Berlotto Winery. To give both of them a try, call Crush Wine and Spirits and ask for the special deal available to podcast listeners.
All Drink to That, where we get behind the scenes of the beverage business. I'm Levy Dalton.
I'm Erin Scala.
And here's our show today.
Are you guys ready to get warmed up? Because I am.
An age-old way to get grape juice for fermenting is to foot-tread grapes. Near the Fertile Crescent and the motherland of vinifera grapes, one of the earliest treading troughs was a hollowed-out tree trunk. This technology spread through the winemaking world, and soon different regions were coming up with their own ways to tread grapes and collect the juice. By the time wine growing got to ancient Egypt, grape treading was somewhat of an art form. Paintings in the tomb of Nakht depict some early Egyptians treading grapes in a vat and the juice coming out of a spout at the bottom. The treaders are holding on to handles suspended over the vat to keep them from falling. But Nakht was no pharaoh. He was married to a musician wife, and he himself was a non-royal scribe who studied the stars in order to help pick the dates for special festivals. His tomb depicts many quotidian events, plowing, harvesting, and winemaking, and he most likely helped to pick the dates for harvest festivals. Many regions used wood containers in which to tread, similar to large barrels. Some regions adopted shallow troughs. In fact, shallow treading troughs made of stones held together with mortar were used in Jerusalem and can still be seen there today. Even now, shallow troughs are commonplace in Portugal, where you'll find lagares in the Douro. These shallow vats are often made of cement, and nowadays you see stainless steel ones too, and they are meant to keep the liquid around knee length. The wide, large vats also spread out the cap more so that more juice is in contact with the skins, and you get a richer extraction, which is especially great for those powerful vintage ports. Because grape treading was such a time-sensitive activity that needed to be carried out just after the harvest, extra labor was needed, which in most rural areas meant that the entire community gathered for this event. Harvest festivals, dances, and music associated with grape treading emerged in many cultures and regions. Music and dance certainly made the stomping less monotonous. Mechanical presses, like the basket press, became more popular in ancient Rome, with giant screws bearing wood slabs down on the grapes, where the juice was able to flow out of slatted sides. For many centuries, basket presses and foot treading occurred simultaneously, so much so that the methods were often curiously blended in medieval manuscript imagery. Today, we have all sorts of presses, bladder presses, high-tech basket presses, crushers and destemmers, and even crushers that are made to mimic and simulate foot stomping. But despite the boons of technology, in just about every region, you'll find several producers who still choose to foot tread their grapes. Many talk about an unparalleled quality of tannins and phenolic matter that the gentle foot crushing is able to achieve. Others mention the introduction of microorganisms that can help start and sustain the fermentation. For some wineries, it's about sustaining the culture of the crush with dances and songs. And for others, it's a way to connect with the very beginnings of winemaking. Stay tuned to hear what's afoot at one winery that uses foot treading to crush grapes. I'm sorry, that was a callous pun. Let's try again. These wines are solely important. No, that's not quite right either. What pairs well with Barolo? Piggies. What drum group would be great at winemaking? Stomp.
750, which is very simply the greatest resource for wholesale wine buyers on the planet, is available in many states, very probably yours. Are you a buyer in Alabama, California, Colorado, Connecticut, D.C., Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Massachusetts, Maryland, North Carolina, South Carolina, that's right, both Carolinas, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Texas, or Virginia? Then 750 is for you. It will help you organize. It will help you sort. It will help you find what you need, and it will save you time. 750 has what you need to do your work better. Check out 750.com. There are so many powerful features, you'll start to wonder how you ever got along without it. 750.com. Find today what you'll want to drink tomorrow.
Fabio Alessandria of the GB Berlotto Winery back on the show. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Levy. I'm very fine.
Very nice to have you here.
Thank you to invite me.
Your estate is located in Verduno, in the Barolo zone.
Yeah, right. Verduno is one of the first villages included in the Barolo zone, and we can say it's the northern village of Barolo area.
So it's a little bit further north than any of the other zones in Barolo.
Yeah, exactly. It's more in the north, very close to the River Tanaro.
And how does that affect the growing conditions in the region?
The River Tanaro influence a lot. I think that influence a lot the microclimate of Verduno, because especially Monvilliero. No, you know, Monvilliero is the northern vineyard of Verduno, the northern vineyard of Barolo area, and as the best vineyard in Barolo area, it's south face. The soil is very white. The altitude is around 300 meters. So during the summer, it could be warm, no? But the River Tanaro, it makes like a breeze. It makes like a fresh current that it brings down the temperature during the summer night, no? This is very important for me because Verduno in general, but Monvilliero, especially Monvilliero, we have a lot of big excursion thermic between night and day. And this is important for the characteristic of the wine. And I think we can note that we can feel that in the Barolo made in Monvilliero because the wine made in Monvilliero, they shows always the perfect maturity of the tannin. No? They show always the silky tannin, the very gentle tannin. That because the grape ripe very well in Monvilliero. But in the other hands, we have always in the wine a kind of freshness, no? The wine are a little bit lighter and more aerian, we can say, than Barolo made in some other area, no? And I think that this is due for the soil, but also for the special microclimate in Verduno, but especially in Monvilliero.
So Monvilliero is a vineyard that once you get past it, you're no longer in Barolo.
Monvilliero is one of the historical hill of the Barolo area. My great-great-grandfather was one of the pioneer, we can say one of the father, one of the pioneer of the Barolo. And he already understood the importance of the vineyard in the wine quality. No, he was very, very, very focused in the quality. Now you can see all the medals, all the prizes that he won in the end of 1800, beginning of 1900 for the quality of the wine. No, he was obsessed by the quality. And this was the reason, I think, because he already at that time, he started to buy vineyard in the best hill, like Monvilliero, like Anubi, no? Because he believe a lot in the quality of the grape. And also at the time it was normal for a seller to buy grape, as he did because he bought grape, but he wanted to be sure that he had the possibility to have every year Gray from Monviglio and Canubi.
So that was GB Berlotto.
See, exactly.
And he was one of the first people to bottle Barolo.
Yeah, the legends say that the first one. I don't know exactly if he was the first one, but Barolo was born in the middle of 1800, and he worked in that period. He was one of the most important producers at that time. He produced the wine for the royal family. And he won a lot of medals. At the time, the exhibition, they were very, very important, no, to build the status of the cellar.
And you're located in Verduno, and how many wineries are in Verduno today?
We can say 5, 6, or 7. Let me. I don't remember always. I remember all because we are all friends. But exactly number, I have to say: Fratelli Alessandria, Castello di Verduno, Belcolle, Poderi Rosette, Diego Morra, Corona Teresina, Cascina Massara, Burlotto Giancarlo. And I hope I don't forget anyone.
So less than 12.
Less than 12, yeah. Less than 12. There are 12 labels of Pelaverga. Pelaverga is another grape historically cultivated in Verduno. There are 12 labels of Pelaverga, but some producers make Pelaverga, but are not in Verduno. Just vinified grape cultivated in Verduno or La Mora or Roddi.
And the town of Verduno is about, what, a few hundred people?
500. 500 people live in Verduno, yeah.
Several of the other wineries are related by blood somehow to your own family.
Yeah. For example, my surname is Alessandria because my father was one of the three brothers Alessandria. And when he got married with my mother, Marina Burlotto, he decided to left the family business and start a new life, work life with my mother.
So he was part of the Fratelli Alessandria winery.
Yeah, exactly.
And then your mother is related to the Castello di Verduno.
Exactly, because the father of my mother, my grandfather, and the father of Lisetta, Gabriella, and Lily, they were brothers. No, they were. GB Burlotto had just one son, Francesco, and three nephew, and they split the property. And my grandfather, as was the unique one, the unique of the three brothers, who loved to work in wine, who loved the vineyard, who loved the work in the cellar. So his father decided to leave the name GB Burlotto, the cellar GB Burlotto, and the best vineyard, Armonviero and Canubi, to my grandfather Ignazio. The other brother inherited the Castello di Verduno, and the third brother inherited another farm, Cascina Massara.
And what are the major vineyards of the Verduno area?
The major vineyard, we can say the Monviglio for sure is the more prestigious, the more well-known vineyard. But anyway, the surface planted with Nebbiolo grape in Verduno is not so big. And Monviglio is the vineyard very well-known. But we can say that Verduno is so small that we have quality in all the vineyard planted with Nebbiolo, with different soil, different exposition, because, for example, Monviglio is extremely north, while Rocchiolme and Neirane, they are, for example, the extremely south, border to La Mora. And so from this vineyard, it changed a lot, because it changed a little bit the soil, it changed the altitude, it changed the exposition, and also the characteristics of the wine for sure are different. And for example, in the latest year, we are appreciating more and more the vineyard with a microclimate a little bit more fresh, no, like Rocchiolmo or like Boscato, no, south face, 350 meters, a soil with a little bit more clay that it kept better the water. No, so in a vintage like 2007, 2009, 2011, we are seeing, we are appreciating more and more the quality of wine made in this slope, this place.
You feel that there's climate change going on?
It's changing. A little bit is changing, for sure. I think that it's changing slowly, slowly. I think that this changement, till today, it's positive for the Barolo area, I think, because, you know, I'm quite young. I'm only 41 years old, but I talk with my parents sometimes about the vintages in the 70s and the 80s when I was young. And it was a period more difficult for the weather, for sure, because now we can say that we especially in the latest 20 years, we can say we have only good vintages. No, someone can prefer the vintage more warm because the wine usually it's more open, more approachable, more fruity, more easy drinking. Some other people can prefer the vintage a little bit more fresh, no, because the wine is it's a little bit more classic, more serious. But anyway, we are speaking about great vintage, good vintages. 20 years ago, every 10 years, they had 2-3 good vintages. Now we are a little bit more selective, no? And every year we say, okay, it was good, but 10 years ago when it was good, stop, and they were happy.
So in a way, you're in a more northern area, so if it gets a little warmer where you are, that might actually be a little helpful in a bit.
Yeah, I think this is one of the reasons because the wine of Verduno, they are more and more noted, no, more and more appreciated. This can be a reason. The other reason is because the wine made in Verduno, they have they are more elegant, no, and so the people more and more is understanding the elegance in the wine, the elegance in the Barolo, no. Some years ago, the people believed that the Barolo have to be very concentrated and tannic and heavy. A Barolo could be tannic and heavy, but some Barolo can be also elegant and more gentle, no? More grace.
So you make Nebbiolo in Canubi, and then you also make Nebbiolo in Monvigliaro and then other Verduno vineyards.
Si.
So Canubi is in the Barolo zone.
Yeah.
And how do you find the Nebbiolo that you make in Canubi to be different from the Verduno Nebbiolo?
It is different. Barolo made in Canubi, it still have a kind of elegance, no? But in the end, the texture of the wine, it's a little bit different. The finish of the palate, it's a little bit more austere. No, we have more pressure in tanning, no? And the wine could be a little bit bigger in the taste. And many people think that what is strange is that in Canubi we have more sand. And usually where there is more sand, the wine is more elegant. But Canubi is something strange. No, in Canubi, we have more sand than in Monvigliaro. But the wine have a little bit more power, a little bit more tannic pressure than in Monvigliaro.
And those are two vineyards that when you harvest the Nebbiolo, you handle them differently.
See, we ferment. A part of the part of Monvigliaro that we utilize for the Aclivi is fermented as we ferment Canubi. But the part of the grape that we utilize for the Barolo single vineyard Monvigliaro, they are vinified in totally different way than Canubi. For Monvigliaro, we don't destem the grape, so we do all cluster fermentation. We just put the grape in open wet tanks of oak, where we ferment all our red wines. We just go inside, we crush the grape by the feet because we don't want to cut the stems. We don't want to have pressure with the stem. And after we do a skin contact very, very long for around 2 months. For Canubi, we work in a different way. We work more in a classic way. So we destem the grape and we do a skin contact, shorter skin contact around 2-3 weeks, independent of the vintage, with some pumping over and some pouching down.
So what do you think whole cluster brings to a wine?
You know, we do the old cluster fermentation for Monviglio because we think they exalt the characteristic of Monviglio. We think that old cluster fermentation in Monviglio, it gives the wine an extra dimension in the deepness, in the complexity of the texture, and it exalts the brightness, the freshness that is typical of Monviglio. So it's a way that where we can obtain the same in the same moment a little bit, where we can exalt the freshness, the brightness of the Monviglio, but we can have a little bit more deepness, a little bit more a texture, more long and more another quality of tanning in the mount.
And what about treading the grapes by foot? Does that give a different kind of extraction?
Yeah, we treat the grape by foot because we don't want to crush the stem. We don't want to cut the stem because the stem is another source of tanning. The stems can give us a very high quality of tanning that helps the wine to age well. But on the other hand, we have to pay attention, don't cut the stem, because we want to avoid the extraction of green aroma and green tanning in the Monviglio. So this is the reason also because we do submerge a cap with a very, very gentle vinification. It's more an infusion than an extraction.
And Monviglio often has a wild strawberry or raspberry note, as you pointed out to me once.
Yeah, that's true.
Where does that, do you think, come from?
From the vineyard. Also, if you vinify Monviglio in a more classic way, as when we vinify Monviglio for the Aclivi, we always have this strawberry. What we are seeing that with the old class of fermentation, we maintain a strawberry aroma for longer time. While when we ferment Monviglio in the normal way, we can say the same in the grape, we have this strawberry in the beginning and sometimes we lose during the aging in the barrel.
And when did you begin the whole cluster on the Monviglio? In what year?
I didn't introduce anything so in the cellar for Monviglio. So it's not my invention. It's not my grandfather made all the Baron that way. So it's a tradition of the family. No? And today we conserve this vinification for Monviglio because we think that exalt the characteristic of the vineyard, but my grandfather Ignazio produced all the Baron in that way.
And what about the press that you use? How do you go about pressing the wine?
We utilize a very simple and small pneumatic press. Very small because we love to move the press very close to the tanks after fermentation, no? Because we love to put directly the grape into the press without use the pump, no? Because if you utilize the pump with the skin, the fermented skin, you can really have green tanning, vegetal tanning, tanning that it doesn't ripe, never, no? And so sometimes you can't utilize the wine from the press, no? While putting the skin by hands into the press, we can utilize the first wine who come out with lower pressure, no? Because the first pressed wine is very, very rich in perfume and quite rich also in tannin, no? It gives the wine a little bit more structure. And it's very important for the aroma of the wine. No, it's very rich in precursor of the aroma. So I think it's good to preserve this quality wine. Yeah.
So in the red wines, you utilize a bit of the pressed wine.
Yeah. Just the first wine who come out from the press. The wine who come out with high pressure. No. We don't utilize for the blend, but just the first wine, no, at lower pressure, I think it give the wine something.
And you don't pump it?
No, we don't pump the skin, the fermented skin. This is very important. No, we go directly in the barrel, in the open vat tanks, and we put directly the grape into the press.
How does it go with the mallow?
The mallow, yeah. So if we speak about the young wine, no, like Pelaverga, like Barbera, like Dolcetto, usually we do the mallow in still tanks immediately after the alcoholic fermentation, because we think that in this moment we preserve more the freshness, no? The wine is a little bit more pure, more fresh, more fruity. And also, we bottle the wine a little bit earlier, so if also the mallow, it's a little bit earlier, is better for the natural stability of the wine. Concerning the Barolo, after the alcoholic fermentation, we go directly in oak, in the big cask of oak, so the mallow happen when it happens.
So you don't induce it?
No. We don't warm the cellar. So sometimes it happens after the alcoholic fermentation. Sometimes it happens during the winter, sometimes in the spring, sometimes in the summer. And, you know, we note that the origin of the grape is really important for the mallow. You know, you note that some vineyards do the mallow a little bit earlier than some other vineyards. Putting the wine in same condition, no?
Do you find a different character to wines that take longer to go through mallow?
I think so. It seems that we have a little bit better stability of the wine. It seems that the wine, it brings a little bit more structure. We have a little bit more stability in the color. And also, I don't want to warm the wine. So I love that the mallow, it happens at lower temperature. And slowly. This is important because of the variation in... During the mallow, we have also a variation of the pH. So if this variation, it happens slowly, I think that the wine slowly, it's more stable, no?
A lot of times when I see Barolotto from an earlier era, you know, the 60s, I don't see single vineyard crews on there. When do you think that it started to happen?
But nobody in the 60s, I think. In the 50s, for sure. In the 60s, really few start to produce single vineyard. The tradition of the Barolo is a tradition of the blend. All the winemakers believe more in the blend than in a single vineyard. Everybody at that time, in the 50s, in the 60s, every seller produced just one Barolo and a really good vintage, the Barolo Riserva, and stop. And the Barolo and the Barolo Riserva, both they were made always with a blend from different vineyard and sometimes from different village.
And when do you think that the Barolotto started to do single crews?
In 82. In 82 vintage, my parents start to produce Montvier and Canobie, single vineyard.
What was the history of your parents working with the estate?
It was a period not so easy because my grandfather was dead very young. His latest vintage was 68. And he died when my mother was 17, 18. And my mother was the unique daughter. And so it was not easy for my mother and for her mother to continue the work in the cellar. Fortunately, they had really nice people, really nice guys who helped my grandfather. They all together tried to manage the cellar, not try to go on. And later in the 71, my mother got married with my father. So slowly they rebuild, no, a little bit. Not they rebuild because the production always they never stopped, no. But of course, for a few years they had a little bit. It was a little bit more problematic, no.
How big was the estate in the 80s? How many hectare of vineyards?
In the 80s, we were a little bit smaller in hectare, and at that time we bought some grape of Dolcetto and Barbera. We never bought grape from Nebbiolo, but we bought at that time some kilo of Barbera and Dolcetto.
How many vineyards do you think the estate was composed of?
At that time, Canubi, Monviglio, also if today Monviglio the property is bigger, Breri, Neirane. So today, speaking about Barolo, we have Rocchiolmo more, we have Boscato more, and the property in Monviglio is bigger.
So you have more vineyards now than then?
Yeah, we have more vineyards now.
And some of those are pretty key vineyards.
Yeah, of course, especially today the property in Monviglio is bigger, and we are happy to have both vineyard in Rocchiolmo and Boscato, because I think it will be the place for the weather of today, no?
Oh, I see. So as climate change starts to happen, you think those vineyards are going to become more and more important?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. We are seeing that. We'll see. We don't know how the weather will be. For example, in the recent two vintages, the weather was not so warm. Well, in 2013, 2014, we had a really cold summer. Fortunately, a good fall, but not so warm. No, 2013, 2014, we can say that they are really two classic vintage for Nebbiolo.
So you started to work with the winery in 1994.
That's it.
And you were also in school at that time.
Yeah, I finished my technical school in Alba in 94. And from 94 till 99, I studied in the University of Viticulture and Enology. And I already helped my parents in the cellar. In 94, I start to experiment. I start to work with some specific wine.
Did you feel that you changed the situation or altered things?
Well, you know, fortunately, I have the same taste in wine of my parents. So also my parents, they are young because they are 63 now. So there is not a big step in generation. There is a step, of course, because son and parents. But anyway, 20 years is not a lot. And fortunately, we have the same taste in wine. And so I didn't feel the necessity to change everything. No, I start to improve. I start to do something better for preserving the style of the cellar.
What do you think that those improvements turned out to be?
I hope to have made something better. It's difficult to say which was the factor, but anyway, more attention. And anyway, one people more work in the cellar is one people more. In a family business, it's important. So we had more time to dedicate to the wine, to the vineyard. And this is one factor. And sincerely, I can tell you which were the things. But anyway, I try to improve the style of the cellar, to do something better. Hmm?
And your parents still work with the winery today?
Yeah, they are still working too much. My father, when I start to help my parents in the... My father always preferred to work in the vineyard than in the cellar, honestly. And so when I started to help them, he told me immediately, Fabio, here, these are the key of the cellar. I'm here, but please, I go in the country, and if you want, you can spend more time in the cellar, and I spend more time in the vineyard. And so I did. Today, honestly, and it was a good thing also for me, because in the beginning I was more attracted by the cellar than in the vineyard. Today I'm changing a little bit. I'm going more and more in the vineyard. I don't know. It seems that everybody, you know, when all the winemakers, when they are young, they prefer the cellar, and slowly, slowly they go in the vineyard. No, it's the life probably.
And did you have siblings?
I have a sister that fortunately, she's an architect, but she's starting to appreciate more and more the work of the family. And from January, she's helping us in the office.
And what are the grapes that you grow?
Considering the red variety, we always were very focused in our red variety, typical red variety. So we never planted Cabernet, Merlot, or Shiraz. We never experiment with this kind of grape. And we cultivate the free classic grape, Piemontese grape, Nebbiolo, Barbera and Dolcetto. We have a small vineyard with Fraser. And we are a little bit more lucky in Verduna because we have also the Palavergo.
Palavergo.
Yeah.
The native grape variety of Verduno.
See, it was strange, but Palavergo was cultivated only in Verduno historically. Now, from the 95, we have the appellation, the DOC, Verduno Palavergo, who limit the area of production to the village of Verduno, plus a small part of the village of La Mora and a small part of the village of Roddi, border to Verduno. The production is still very small today because only, if I remember well, only 15 hectares of Palavergo we have in total, all the producers together, and around 130,000 bottles a year.
What is Palavergo like to grow?
Palavergo love the best place. Palavergo, we can say that we plant Palavergo where we have Nebbiolo. Palavergo, it's a grape that love the best exposition, love east, south, and west, like, and love the same soil of Nebbiolo. It's not so difficult to cultivate. It's a grape quite generous also in the production. We have to pay attention, especially during the last moment of the maturity, because it's quite sensitive to the botrytis. So in the last moment of the maturity, we have to pay more attention. And it's also a grape that is not so easy to vinify, because Palavergo is very, very sensitive variety, no? It's a variety that it feel a lot the hands of the winemaker, no? Because it's so delicate, so gentle, that we have to be very gentle with this kind of grape.
And what about Fraser? What's that like to grow?
Yeah, Fraser. It's you know, Fraser is related to Nebbiolo, no? The University of Turin think that Fraser is the precursor of Nebbiolo. Fraser is the parent of the Nebbiolo. A large part of DNA in Fraser and Nebbiolo is the same. Fraser is another variety who love the best place, and this probably is the reason, because the production of Fraser is getting lower, is getting down, is suffering Nebbiolo Fraser. Because, of course, Nebbiolo is more well-known, it's more easy to sell. Fraser is a variety, a little bit more rustic, so it needs a lot of attention. It needs the best place. For example, our yield in Fraser is lower than Nebbiolo, because the tannin of Fraser doesn't arrive very well as the tannin of the Nebbiolo. Fraser is a variety very rich in tannin and more rustic tannin, if you want. So you have to pay attention to the quality of the phenolic ripening, no? And so a lot of effort and not so good market, no? And this is the reason, because I think the Fraser is, the production of Fraser is decreasing a little bit, yeah.
And what's a grape like Barbera like to grow in a region like Verduno?
Yeah, the surface of Verduno is not completely in the area of Barolo. So this is could be not so positive, but in the other hand, it's positive for the other variety, no? Because where you can plant Nebbiolo for Barolo, it's easy that the producer leave the best place to produce Barolo, no? Reserve, it's normal that we make a reserve the best place to produce Barolo. As in Verduno, we have a part of the soil not included in the Barolo area. In that part, also with good exposition and good soil, we can plant variety as Pelaverga, as Barbera. We, for example, have Barbera in position like Neirane or like Castagna, and Dalvos, and we have also vineyard in Cadia. Cadia is a vineyard in Rodi village. It's Cadia is the first hill of the first vineyard of Rodi, and Cadia is bordered to Monvier. Monvier is the latest vineyard in Verduno, and after start the village of Rodi, and Cadia is the first vineyard. And so we have Barbera in Cadia and in Verduno. Village in Castagna and Neirane area.
And does it respond differently in those?
They respond differently.
Cooler zone.
Verduno is cooler than Rodi. Also because Cadia vineyard is completely south, and the altitude is lower. It's around 280 meters. But it's not too bad because Barbera love more than Nebbiolo the warmer vintage. No? The backbone of the Barbera is the acidity. No? And of course, when the vintage is too fresh, too cold, sometimes the acidity of Barbera is not balanced in wine. So I think that Barbera prefer the warmer vintage than the cooler vintage. No? For example, 2014, it's we are tasting now the wine, we are evaluating now the wine, but slowly we are appreciating a lot the Nebbiolo. For Barbera, it's a little bit more difficult, and probably in 2014 we don't make our selection of Barbera Aves because we prefer to utilize also the best quality grape for the classic Barbera. To maintain our standard level of the classic Barbera.
So generally you make two Barberas?
We make two Barbera, yeah. The classic Barbera and the Aves.
But in 14 you may not?
Probably no. We see, but today the first tasting, the first analysis, no, we think that probably the basic Barbera need the best grape that we usually utilize for Aves because... it's important for us to produce a good classic Barbera. And when it's possible to produce a selection, we do. But when it is not possible, it's better to bring some decision.
And Dolcetto, what's that like to grow in the Verduno zone?
In Verduno zone, we have Dolcetto in two vineyards, in one part in Irane. And in the, and we say Imperno, who is the bottom of the Neirane, no? In the end of Neirane and Castagna also, no? Down Castagna, going down to Castagna.
So not the Monforte Perno, but Verduno?
No, Verduno Perno, yeah. No, we have two vineyards in Verduno and one vineyard in Cadia, in Rotti.
Does it react differently there than it might in other zones?
I think that the difference between Rodi and Verduno is the same than Barbera, also because it's not so easy anymore to find a vineyard with Dolcetto south exposition. So, but you know, Dolcetto sometimes the south exposition for Dolcetto is too much. No, sometimes Dolcetto for our idea of Dolcetto, because we love the Dolcetto, maintain the fragrance of Dolcetto, maintain the drinkability, not too much better, not too much easy. No, we love the Dolcetto with personality, with character, but that maintain a kind of fragrance, a kind of drinkability. No, the wine have to be pleasant to drink. So. Also, some exposition more west or more east, more fresher in the bottom of the valley, in the bottom of the hill, could be good for Dolcetto. Yeah.
So you make one bottling of Dolcetto, one bottling of Frasier.
Yeah.
One bottling of Pella Verga.
Exactly.
Two Barbera.
Yeah.
And then how many Nebbiolo do you make?
We produce the Lange Nebbiolo with the young vine, with the younger vineyard, or with a part of the vineyard that in a specific vintage we believe doesn't have the potential to produce a good Barolo. So we prefer to produce a good Lange Nebbiolo. And after, we produce four different kinds of Barolo. Monvilliere and Canubi single vineyard, and two Barolo where we still work with the old philosophy of the blend. So the Barolo Classic and the Barolo Acclivi. Acclivi, we can say, is the old concept of the Barolo Reserva. So it's a selection of the best part of our vineyard and the best blend that we can do for the vintage.
So Acclivi is kind of a Barolo Reserva for you.
You know, we don't call Acclivi Reserva. We say that it's made with the old concept of the Reserva, but till today we don't label as Reserva. We'll see in the future. We don't love too much the name Reserva, the name Superiore, because of, you know, it seems like an old concept of the Italy, no? That just because the wine is old is better, no? And I don't think so. The wine is better because the vineyard is good, because of the selection of the grape, because the grower pay more attention, but not just because it's old, just because we wait longer time in the cellar. No? And for the rules, Reserva mean more time in the cellar. So we would like to call Acclivi Reserva, and we can wait 1 year more. This is not a problem. But in the other hands, it means like an old concept of Italian wine. And, you know, we'll see. Perhaps in the future we will change idea.
And for the Nebbiolo, it's mostly Lampia, or you make Miche?
Oh, in Verduno, you know, Lampia, Miche, Rosé, Bolla. This we can say is quite an old concept concerning Nebbiolo, because recently the University of Turin demonstrate that Bolla and Lampia have the same DNA, so Bolla doesn't exist. Miche is a Lampia with a virus, so it's a Lampia a little bit sick who produce less vegetation also, no? Because it's a little bit more tired, no? It's a little bit sick. So Miche is Lampia genetically. And Rosé, we can say, is not a Nebbiolo. It's another variety. Honestly, in Verduno, also in the past, there was not a lot of Rosé. There was not a Rosé. I think this is normal. It's because Rosé is it's a kind of Nebbiolo. It's a kind of variety to give the wine more elegance, more finesse, more perfume. And in Verduno, we can say that the soil already give us elegance, perfume, and balance. So we can say we don't need Rosé. So in our vineyard, we have mostly Lampia and a part of Miche.
And what's it like to grow those two things in the same vineyard? What do you notice?
We grow quite in the same way, Miche and Lampia. Miche, especially in a very, very old clone, is very, very inconstant in the production. So usually the pruning is a little bit longer. Oh, this is the old way to pruning Nebbiolo, is a very, very long branch, no? Because of, especially in the past, the Nebbiolo grape didn't produce in the first 1, 2, 3 bud break, no?
So the first three buds on the branch often didn't produce grapes.
Exactly. Especially in the clone of the past. Especially in the Miche. So the people in the past pruned Nebbiolo with a longer branch. Today with the clones, the recent clone, Nebbiolo produce also in the... Some clones, not every clones, but some clones produce also in the first bud, yeah.
It's a difference of how you handle them in the vineyards in terms of the pruning.
See. We are changing also a little bit the not change it, but we are experiment also in the vineyard some different way of Guyot, no? Because the vineyard, hopefully Nebbiolo not a lot. Nebbiolo is a variety quite resistant, but in some other variety like Pelaverga, like Sauvignon, like Barbera, we have more and more disease concerning the wood, no? Like esca, I don't know how do you translate in English esca, or also flavescenza dorata, no? And especially for the esca, probably if we make some modification to the way of pruning, we can reduce the risk and we can increase the life, the age of the plants. So we are experimenting some new Guyot pruning to have to increase the longevity of our plants.
Because sometimes people say esca is carried on pruning shears in cuts, so it might go from vine to vine through the action of pruning.
Yeah, this is a problem. Yeah, and also probably the big problem is to make big cut. More the cut is big, more the way for the infection is big, and more the plants make efforts to close, no, the cut, no. And so we are starting some pruning to, in order to limit the big cuts and to do every year only small cutting.
And you mentioned Sauvignon because you make some Sauvignon.
Yeah, exactly. Blanc. We didn't speak about Sauvignon Blanc. My parents were the first who planted Sauvignon Blanc in Barolo area. Yeah, they planted the first vineyard of Sauvignon Blanc in 86. And they planted Sauvignon Blanc because at that time they felt the pleasure, they felt the pleasure to experiment, to work with a wine variety. And, you know, in the region we don't have a lot of tradition of white wine. We don't have a lot of white grape because the Arnais is more... it's more traditional, it's more typical in the Roero area. In Langa, we had some vineyard with Favorita, but the idea of my parents was to produce a white wine with a longer life, with a little bit more complexity than Favorita. Favorita, with Favorita, you can produce some really good wine, fresh, fruity, easy drinking. But the idea of my parents was to produce a wine with a little bit more complexity. And so they loved Sauvignon Blanc. They had the right piece of land for Sauvignon Blanc. And so they planted. And we are happy with Sauvignon Blanc. And in the soil where we plant Sauvignon Blanc, we have also some chalkiness. Because in Verduna, the soil of Verduna is quite complicated. No? We have two different type of soil in Verduna. We say the soil Tortonian soil, that is typical for the Barolo, and the Messinian soil in the part of Verduno where we have more in the part of Verduno, the Messinian part of Verduno, we have a little bit of chalk in the soil, and this is good for Sauvignon Blanc. This is good also for Pelaverga. And so today we produce two different kinds of Sauvignon Blanc, also Viridis and Dives.
And the difference there is how you age it in wood, right?
Yeah, the difference is Dives, it comes from the older part of the vineyard, the first, the vineyard that my parents planted in 86. And Dives is fermented and aged in barrel of acacia. While Viridis, it comes from the younger part of the vineyard and is made only in steel tanks. Because in Viridis, we try to keep the freshness, the crispiness of the Sauvignon Blanc. While in Dives, we try to exalt the complexity and we can say the minerality of the Sauvignon Blanc.
What's it like to work with acacia?
You know, we love acacia for Sauvignon Blanc because it's a way to exalt a profile of Sauvignon Blanc. And we think that... The match between oak and Sauvignon Blanc is not so easy. So the acacia is a kind of wood, a little bit more neutral, who preserve better the freshness of Sauvignon Blanc because it's the oxygen. The acacia is more close to the oxygen. No, it's more is a kind of wood more reductive. No, we can say, and less invasive, less aromatic, and so it permits us to have a certain kind of evolution, also a certain kind of texture in the mouth, without having the classic oaky aroma. No.
For the reds, you ferment everything in wood.
We ferment all our red in open vat tanks of oak. In general, we utilize big cask of oak. Just for the selection of Barbera, Aves, and for the blend of Nebbiolo and Barbera, we work with smaller cask, Demi-Muy, 500 liter big. For all the other wine that we produce, we just utilize big cask of oak, the classic Botti.
So fermenting in open wood, open top wood, and then aging in large wood.
Yeah.
And you make a blend of Nebbiolo and Barbera?
We make a blend of Nebbiolo and Barbera. The name is Morris. It's the classic Piemontese blend. Barbera and Nebbiolo, they are two varieties, we can say, quite complementary, you know, because Nebbiolo is a variety, plenty of character, very complex in the nose and more rich in tannin, you know. The backbone of Nebbiolo is the tannin, no? While Barbera is a variety with a color more intensive, more purple, more violet, more rich in color, more rich in acidity, more rich in fruit, black fruit, while Nebbiolo is more red fruit and spicy and complexity in aroma. So they are two varieties that they match very well together. We do the blend before the fermentation. So it's a co-fermentation because in this way we feel that the unit is stronger, yeah.
What about open top wood for fermenting? What is the advantage of that?
So it's a way that it permits us to be very, 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 it permits us to be very close with the skin because we can see, we can touch. And also it permits us to be very soft and very gentle in the vinification because we do everything we can say by hands, no. Also the punching down, we go personally in the top of the vat, and we try to do very soft pressure, no. It's not we want to avoid the mechanic extraction, no. So the open vat it helps us to be more soft with the skin, and also we can say that we have a more oxygenation during the fermentation. An open vat permit to the dioxide carbonic to go away, and usually we have less problem of reduction, no, during the aging. And also the oak, it permit us to have more constancy in the temperature, no. The changement of the temperature in the oak, they are more slowly, no.
When do you start drinking the different red wines that you make?
Today, I'm a drinker of quite young wine. Speaking about Barolo, I don't know, probably it's... I will change idea in the future, I don't know, but when I go out for a dinner with friends, usually I choose Barolo around 10 years old. It could be 7, 8, it could be 15, 16, depending on the vintage, depending on the area of production, depending on the vineyard, depending on the producer. But I think today, for my palate, when the Barolo is around 10 years old, we still have the fruit, we still have the personality of the grape, the personality of the soil. So we can say, okay, this is a Barolo from Vertuno, this could be a Barolo from Amora, this probably could be a Barolo from Monforte or Ginestra, no? And we have already the complexity of the aging in the bottle. So for me, around 10 years is the moment where we have when the Barolo is more complete. It's also true that the best emotion that I had I had emotion with Barolo, old Barolo, no, because Barolo, it's a great wine when it's well aged, no. So to have emotion, older bottle, to drink Barolo with food, and to have a wine, we can say more complete, I prefer around 10 years old. Today, we'll see in the future.
As you've mentioned, sometimes the tannic structure of Verduno Nebbiolo is not the same as the tannic structure in other areas of Barolo. It seems more fine grain, more finesse, more elegance.
Yeah.
Do you find Verduno Barolo complementing a different kind of food sometimes than would be the case for...
They are more versatile, for sure. They are more versatile. They could be open also in earlier moment. So in this day, we are tasting the 2011. It's a vintage, very specific, no? But the 2011, they are drinkable, no? And the wine made in Verduno, they are a little bit more versatile because, you know, we don't, the Barolo from Verduno don't need the Brasato. If you have the Brasato, it's perfect. But with a Barolo from Verduno, you can just open the fridge and bring a piece of cheese, a piece of Parmigiano. It's perfect. Oh. We have this gentle tanning, this circle tanning, more freshness, lighter structure also, no? That it permit to the wine to be more versatile, more easy in the matching.
And what about Pella Verga? That's somewhat of a unique grape. What should I be thinking about if I were eating that with food?
Usually Pella Verga is our wine for the, we can say, the picnic, no? It's a wine for the appetizer. It's a wine that we love with sausages. We love with carne cruda for roast meat, no? Tartare de bœuf. We love with the entree, all the classic Piemontese entree, carne cruda, vitello tonnato, all the vegetable. I think Pella Verga, it's a quite modern wine, no? Because in the same time is not too complicated, not too heavy, but plenty of personality, no? So for me, Pella Verga is the perfect wine for a perfect glass of wine for lunch, no? When we want to have something not too heavy, a pasta with vegetable or an entree, a vitello tonnato or a caprese, pomodoro e mozzarella or this kind of dishes, no? Not too white meat, fish. Also with fish is good Pella Verga. With tuna. It's, I think, is a good wine also for the Japanese food, no? For sushi, sashimi.
And what about the vintages since the mid-90s when you arrived at the winery? What would you say about the vintages from, say, 94 till now? What have been standouts? What have been difficult?
Difficult. So, 94, my first vintage, I remember very well. It was not so easy because... I remember like today, we were in the vineyard. I was in the vineyard with my parents, all three at the time. We walked in the vineyard and the grape looked, they were perfect. They were ripe. And so we said, it's time to harvest. Tomorrow we harvest. At that time, the forecast in Italy, they were not so good. So it was a little bit difficult to manage the harvest, no? Anyway, in 94, the grapes were perfect, and after it rained. So 94, it was probably the vintage more difficult, because after we had 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, we didn't produce Barolo at all. 2002 was not so easy, very fresh, very cold. The wine didn't have the... I speak about my wine. There is in the comments some 2002 extremely good, but anyway, in general, the Barolo didn't have the materia, the backbone, to the potential to be a good Barolo. So we didn't produce at all Barolo in 2002. 2003 was Extremely different, extreme in the other way, very hot and very dry. The dryness was the problem of 2003 because during the maturity, during the summer, the plants stopped to ripe because of too much dryness. No, 2004 good, 2005 also good, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And 14 also. 14 was really challenging. Was a difficult year. Really, really difficult year. But in the end, Nebbiolo. In the end, September, October, we had good weather, not too warm. We can compare a little bit 11 and 13, no, for different reason, because both vintage start very early. So the spring was quite warm in both vintage. In both vintage, the real summer was really bad. Also in 2011, really bad. Not really bad, but anyway, in 2011, the summer was fresh. June, July, we can say we didn't have summer. But in 2011, we had the Indian summer in the late August, September, October. We had a postponed summer, so... quite warm fall. While in 2014, we had a good fall, good September, good October, but not warm. No? So only we can say that we can really see, comparing that 2011 to 2013, what the weather in September, October can change the style of the wine. No? Because 2014, the wine are really fresh, the acidity is high, really fresh fruit in the wine, tang with a lot of tension, a little bit more aggressive. Wine that probably need time. They doesn't have a lot of volume, but... a lot of tension, no? Good structure. While in 2011, the wine are more soft, more approachable, more open, more fruity, and with more density too. But in 2011, we have also good fruit because of June and July were fresher, no? So we have this double phase in 2011. A lot of fruit, fresh also. But the wine are quite open, no? Quite approachable. Tanny are very integrated in the fruit, very smooth, open.
Do you find a difference in what's a good Pellaverga vintage and what's a good Nebbiolo vintage? Are those two different vintages? Or?
For Pellaverga, we can say that the trend is quite the same. But for Pellaverga, is a little bit more easy because Pellaverga... we joined Pellaverga quite young, so it's not so important how the wine it aged. No, it's very important the balance of the wine, the quality of the wine. So for Barolo, it's a little bit more complicated because sometimes we love the vintage in the first years, and after the wine doesn't show very well with aging. No. While for Pellaverga, if it's good in the first year, it's enough. No, so I think this is the most important difference. No? But usually, Pellaverga and Nebbiolo are quite related, yeah.
And what have been your favorite vintages for Barolo so far, the ones that you've worked?
For me?
Yeah.
To drink now, I love the 2001.
Me too. Barolotto 2001s are awesome.
I love 2001. I love 99 Monviglio. To drink now also the 2004. They are quite open. They are quite drinkable. Yeah, these are three vintage, for example, that I love to drink now. And considering the older vintage, we opened some good bottle of Monviglio 89, 85. I love this kind of vintage. Yeah.
What about 2010? You expect good things?
See. We'll see. Everybody is happy about 2010. We can say it's a good vintage. Time will be No, time will say yes, no, something. But anyway, we have a good expectation. We have a good expectation, yeah.
And how have you seen the market change for the wines of Verduno? Or has it not changed?
It's changed. It's changing. We can say that 10, 20 years ago, the people, the consumer, expected from the Barolo. But for the wine in general, we can say wine very rich, very concentrated, sometimes too much oaky. Today, the people, I feel that the people is understanding more and more the elegance in the wine. And the people is understanding more and more the difference about the Barolo, about the different village. No? And I think this is an important step, no? Because today, also if the tradition of Barolo is the tradition of the blend, but I think it's important to speak about village Barolo, no? The difference between the different villages, because we have the difference, no? And today the people, the Barolo lovers, now they are speaking about the difference between the soil. While 20 years ago Barolo was Barolo and stop. It doesn't matter if it was made in Serra Lunga or in Monforte or in Verduno, no? They expected always the bomb, no? So, I think that popularity of the wine of Verduno is growing because of this changement in the style of what the people want, what the people expect from the Barolo.
And you recently expanded the cellar facility.
Yeah, we renovated a part of the older cellar. And we build another cellar underground just for the aging in the bottle, because we believe that the aging in the bottle is very, very important. I'm not a big friend of steel tanks, especially for Nebbiolo. And I think that when the Barolo spend enough time in wood, it's time to go in bottle, stop. So, especially in some vintages, we are reducing a little bit the time in oak, and we go a little bit earlier in bottle, especially in the vintage, a little bit more warmer, no? Where in the vintage where the tannins are more softer and they don't need an extra time in oak.
So you're preserving freshness by bottling earlier?
We try, yeah.
But ultimately, you're releasing at the same age. So
yeah, we release at the same age. Right? We just spend more time in bottle. Yeah.
And what other projects do you see in the next few years for GB Berlotto? What do you have planned?
So we are replanting really nice vineyard that we were lucky to buy in Boscato, in the top of the hill of Boscato, top of the vineyard, really the top. We bought 1.7 hectares. It was a long time that we were seeing this piece of land, and fortunately, in the end, we had the chance to buy this piece of land. So I think this is the project, no? In the cellar, as you said, we have made some renovation. So I think that we'll be more and more focused in the vineyard. This is an extra step that we want to do.
So what might that imply in the future? More work with the Gio?
See, I know we try to, I don't want to say to go in the bio direction, because, but to work more in the vineyard, to be more present in the vineyard, to understand more and more the vineyard, what the vineyard need. I think this is important, no? To reduce the chemical intervention and to be more close to our plants. I think this is the most important way to exalt the characteristic of our soil.
What's the average age of vines in general? I mean, what do you have? Different plots, some younger, some older?
Yeah. Of course, the older vineyard that we have is 6 years old. the younger it will be, the vineyard that we are planting this spring. But usually the average is quite old today. It's a good moment for us because considering Barolo, considering Nebbiolo, we have to plant this vineyard in Boscato. But the older vineyard, they are minimum 15 years old, 15, 20 years old, and maximum 60 years old. So I think the vineyard in the production, they are in a good moment, no?
Obviously, you make Barolo in Verduno and you make Barolo in Barolo, the commune. But if you could make Barolo somewhere else, where would be your choice if you could?
So I think it will remain a dream because today the vineyards are so expensive in the Barolo area and it's not so easy to buy because if you are not a neighbor, it's more difficult to buy. Anyway, we are located in Verduno. We have a lot of vineyard in Verduno, and we believe a lot in Verduno. We have the chance to have a vineyard in Canubi, who is in the middle of the Barolo area. So the dreams, it is to have a vineyard in completely in the other side. And if I can choose, I can say Rocca in Castiglionfalletto because it's in the other side of Barolo, so it's in the part of the soil where we have a little bit more structure, but it's a vineyard who really maintain the grace, the elegance that I love in the wine. So Rocca, but it would be only a dream, I think.
Fabio Alessandria of GB Berlotto, he's making consistent improvements and still dreaming as well. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you to you, Levi, to invite me, and thank you for all the people that will listen to the records.
Fabio Alessandria of GB Berlotto. Frasia is a genetic parent of Nebbiolo and shares with Nebbiolo a firm character with substantial tannins. Because Frasia is both harder to grow than Nebbiolo and also sells for less money, fewer and fewer growers are still producing Frasia wines. But GB Berlotto is one of the exceptions, and their Frasia is one of the best out there. If you would like to try it for yourself, there's a great deal available to you now as a listener of the podcast from the excellent team at Crush Wine and Spirits. They are offering a discount on the GB Berlotto 2013 Frasia so that the pricing comes down to $18.95 a bottle if you call them at 212-980-9463 and use the offer code IDTT for me, or if you use that same promo code online at crushwineco.com. You'll be able to pick up the 2013 GB Berlotto Frasia for a sizable discount off the normal price. Just remember to give Crush the offer code IDTT for me, IDTTFORME, when it comes time to place your order. As Barolo prices climb higher and higher, it is easy to appreciate the strong value that Frasia represents to wine drinkers. Frasia is a grape variety that is very much linked to the history of the Piemonte, and so is the GB Berlotto Winery. To give both of them a try, call Crush Wine and Spirits and ask for the special deal available to podcast listeners. That was our show. If you're curious about what we're up to in the future, check us out on Facebook. Give us a like and you'll see all our fancy, fancy posts. It's I'll Drink to That, Talking Wine with Levi Dalton is a Facebook fan page. Hey, fan page. Yeah. We're on Twitter at Drink to That Pod. And we're also up on Instagram. Some pretty artistic shots sometimes. Sometimes not. Sometimes good, though. At Levi Opens Wine. And then I got to tell you, we're also got our own website there. It's alldrinktothatpod.com where you can stream stuff off of it or download direct episodes so you don't have to go through iTunes if you don't want to. We like to give options. We're about options here. So lots to do, lots to think about. Maybe you want a t-shirt. Maybe you like a fancy, well, they're not that fancy, but they're pretty cool. I'll Drink to That t-shirt of your very own in a variety of different colors, shapes, sizes, onesies even. I mean, you can get onesies, you can get tanks, you can get biker tanks, you can get tees, you can get other stuff, hoodies, for God's sakes. It's all up there. You can find the information up on our website if you'd like to check it out and wear what you hear.
And then there's also that possibility you could shoot us some real support. Shoot us a little dough. Help keep the microphones rolling. We are here because of dedication, because of love, because of interest. But we're also here because we make the finances work, and we could always use a little help with that. Thanks for your consideration.